Ever wondered how some companies, the ones starting in a garage, actually get the money to become huge, or how big companies fund their next massive project?
Yeah, it really all comes down to raising capital. That's the core challenge.
Right. So today we're doing a deep dive into that whole world. It can seem pretty complex from the outside.
Exactly. We're going to explore the different stages, starting with early stage venture capital, and then walk through how companies sell shares to the public. We're using a kind of raising capital masterclass guide to, uncover the methods, the key players, and even some surprising details.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Every firm needs capital, right? It's either debt or equity.
That's the fundamental choice.
But for those really new ventures, the ones with high risk but maybe high potential, venture capital or VC is often critical.
Absolutely. And within that, you've got different players. There are angel investors.
Individuals, right?
Yep.
Using their own cash.
Usually, yeah. Often successful entrepreneurs themselves. Then you have the VC firms, which are pooling money from bigger sources. Think pension funds, university endowments.
Okay, institutional money.
Right. And a key concept they often use is staged financing.
Staged, meaning they don't just give all the money at once.
Exactly. It's doled out in rounds, usually tied to hitting specific milestones. It keeps founders motivated and, frankly, manages the investors' risk.
Makes sense. So what are the typical stages?
Well, you start with a seed or angel round. That's really just to prove the basic idea works, build a prototype, maybe.
Get it off the ground.
Then comes early stage VC. Series A, Series B. This covers salaries, market research, finishing the product, really starting to generate revenue and grow.
Taking traction.
Then late stage VC, Series C, D. That's often about grabbing more market share, maybe acquiring smaller companies, or even preparing to go public.
And I've heard of growth equity too. Is that different?
Yeah, that's typically for more mature private companies. Maybe they're already successful, perhaps even a unicorn, valued over $1 billion, but they want to stay private a bit longer. Growth equity helps them scale without an IPO just yet.
You know, here's where it gets really interesting for me. VCs aren't just handing over cash, are they?
Oh, definitely not. They're active participants. They bring expertise, networks, but they also usually demand significant equity and board seats.
So access to that capital is tough, and it costs you in terms of control.
It's a major trade-off, and it's big money flowing. In 2019, for instance, later VC rounds saw something like $80 billion invested.
Wow. And geographically.
California dominated, pulling in over $31 billion just that year. And in terms of sectors, for first-round deals, software and pharma biotech were way out front.
Okay, so a company successfully navigates the VC maze, builds momentum. Then what? Often it's the IPO, right? The initial public offering.
That's the traditional big leap into the public markets. And it's a whole different ballgame, heavily regulated. Think the Securities Acts of 33 and 34, overseen by the SEC.
Right, the government steps in. What are the key steps there?
Okay, first, the board has to approve it. Then you file a massive registration statement with the SEC. Lots of detail in there.
The paperwork phase.
Then comes the waiting period. During this time, they circulate a preliminary prospectus. You might hear it called a red herring.
A red herring. Why that name?
Because it has this bold red disclaimer saying the info isn't final yet. The SEC reviews the statement for factual accuracy during this time. Crucially, they don't judge if it's a good investment, just if the facts are disclosed.
Got it. SEC checks facts, not business sense.
Correct. Then the price gets set, the final prospectus goes out, and the underwriters really start the selling effort. You'll often see those formal tombstone ads announcing the offering.
Underwriters. These are the investment banks, usually. What's their exact role?
They're crucial. They help structure the deal, figure out the pricing, and importantly, they sell the shares to investors. Their pay is the gross spread, basically the difference between what the public pays and what the company receives per share.
And how do they structure that deal? Are there different ways?
Yeah, mainly three types. Firm commitment is most common. The underwriter buys the whole issue up front, taking on the risk.
So they own the shares if they can't sell them.
Exactly. Then there's best efforts, where they just promise to try their best to sell the shares, no guarantees. And sometimes you see a Dutch auction where investors bid, and the highest price that sells all the available shares becomes the offer price for everyone.
Okay, let's unpack something that always seems counterintuitive about IPOs: underpricing.
Ah, yes, the phenomenon where the stock price jumps significantly on the very first day of trading.
Right. It seems like the company sold its shares too cheaply. Great for the buyers, but isn't that money left on the table for the company itself?
It absolutely is, and it can be dramatic. The long-term average first-day return, say from 1960 to 2019, was around 17%. But in hot markets, like 1999-2000...
The dot-com boom?
Yeah, the average first-day pop was over 64%, sometimes way higher. Yes. It tends to be more extreme for smaller, riskier companies.
Why on earth would companies agree to that? Leave potentially millions on the table?
Well, there are theories. Maybe it helps attract investors, creates buzz. Maybe it's a kind of insurance for the underwriters. Or way to reward big institutional investors who buy lots of shares. There's also the winner's curse idea, underprice slightly, so the winning bidders don't feel they overpaid.
Interesting. So underpricing is a big indirect cost. Are there other costs to going public?
Oh, yes. Flotation costs include direct expenses, lawyers, accountants, filing fees, and indirect costs, like all the management time spent on the IPO process instead of running the business.
And you mentioned something about abnormal returns, like the stock price dropping when a company announces it's issuing more equity later on.
Yeah, that can happen. Huh? It's often seen as a signal from management. Maybe they think the stock is currently overvalued, so it's a good time to sell shares. Or maybe it signals they can't take on more debt. It's all about market interpretation.
It's worth noting, too, right, that issuing debt is generally cheaper.
Typically, yes. Fewer regulatory hurdles, especially since a lot of long-term debt is issued privately, avoiding full SEC registration.
Are there alternatives to a big public offering for raising equity?
Sure. One method is a rights offering. This gives existing shareholders the first right to buy new shares, usually at a discount.
Ah, so it helps them maintain their ownership percentage.
Exactly. It prevents their stake from being diluted automatically, and it can be less costly than a public offering.
That brings up dilution. People worry about that a lot when new shares are issued.
Right, and it's a bit misunderstood.
Yeah.
Yes, things like earnings per share or book value per share might go down just mathematically when you have more shares.
The pie is cut into more slices?
Correct. But true market value dilution, where existing shareholders actually lose value, that only happens if the company uses the new capital for something stupid. Specifically, a project with a negative net present value.
Meaning a project expected to lose money or value overall.
Precisely. If the company issues shares to fund a genuinely value-creating project, even if accounting metrics per share dip short-term, the overall value for shareholders should ideally increase. Yeah. It's the use of funds that matters, not just the issuance itself.
So wrapping this up, what's the big picture for you, our listener? Raising capital isn't just about getting cash. It's this incredibly strategic process.
It really is. Full of critical choices, navigating regulations, reading market signals, and balancing different stakeholder interests.
It goes way beyond just the finance department. It shapes the company's future.
So here's a final thought. Next time you read about a company raising VC money or planning an IPO, think about those trade-offs. The control given up, the fees paid, that potential money left on the table. How does that balance against the potential value of what they plan to do with the capital? Understanding that tension gives you a much richer view of how businesses truly grow and compete.